Empty Set Entertainment presents Slay, created by Scott Sigler and Rob Otto, performed by Scott Sigler. This story is intended for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, Junkie. Not much news for you this week. Siglerpedia continues to be a pain in my ass. We've transferred hosting away from Amazon Web Services to A2 Hosting, so that's good because that took a long time. Working with the AWS people is very difficult. Very difficult to get anything done. We finally got that covered. But now the main page of the Siglerpedia Media Wiki is missing, they're telling me. There's no landing page, so we're getting some kind of crazy error. Ugh. Well, we will figure this out, and then we'll move on to the next problem, and we will solve that too. It is a pain in the ass for me, because while Siglerpedia is public info for junkies to read up on connections between the various stories, it's also the main place I keep track of the various stories. Not having that resource, not being able to add new characters, setting, bits of magic and whatnot is a big problem for me. Siglerpedia is the primary source of continuity checks while I write, which is no surprise, as it is run by Siglerverse continuity czar Big John Vizcarra, and he can't get on it either. Huge pain in the ass, but we're almost there. I'm working away on the second draft of Warpath, the first draft of the Crypt Book 2, and the full re-recording of Slay Book 1's audiobook. The quality simply wasn't there for a paid, unabridged, ad-free audiobook, so we are fixing it. Busy little bees, my friends. We are busy little bees. Back to Slay Season 2. Let me get you caught up on the story so far, and then we're all gonna float down here. Previously on Slay. In the last episode, Ariella dropped a bomb. The stone medallion that Lincoln and Billy acquired from the troglodyte in Tollingwood is a conduit that will let Lincoln travel to the shelf to see his son, Sam. After 5 years in that purgatory-like realm, is Sam still alive? If he is, what will he think of seeing his father for the first time in years? A father that has been unable to rescue him. Find out next on Slay, episode 54. Billy had never seen Lincoln like this, like a ghost of himself. Hard to reconcile what Billy saw now with the motorcycle-riding, sword-wielding, gun-toting badass who had fought magic giant panthers, magical druids, and murder-minded supernatural bounty hunters. That Link? That Link was a death dealer, an action hero come to life. This Link? This Link seemed barely a forgotten breath away from dying right here, right now.
"I can see Sam," Lincoln said. "What do I have to do?"
A phrase like that, coming out of a man like Lincoln's mouth? No question, he would do anything required. No matter how violent, no matter how desperate. "You need something that was Sam's," Ariella said. "Something physical. Something he touched." Lincoln sat quiet for a moment, staring straight ahead, staring at nothing.
"Mags," he said, "you know my box, the one under my bed?"
Magda nodded.
"Yeah, I'll get it."
She left the nave, moving quickly but not running. "All right," Ariella said. "Lincoln, once you have the object, you'll press the medallion against it. Then you need to speak some words in a variant of Sumerian."
"Sumerian?" Lincoln shook his head. "I don't speak Sumerian."
"I'll write it down phonetically for you. Let me get some paper."
She, too, left the nave. Lincoln turned his vacant eyes on Billy.
"Should I go? Will Sam hate me? Seeing him's... Is this the right thing to do?"
Lincoln was asking him. Billy had no idea. He didn't have a child. He'd never even lived on his own. This shit was way above his pay grade.
"Hell if I know," Billy said. I don't
I mean, man, I'm just a kid myself.
Lincoln again faced forward, again stared into nothingness. The man was a shell of himself. He had no confidence, and without that confidence, he was like a suit of empty armor propped up for display. A realization hit Billy, hit him like a sucker punch. Lincoln needed help. He needed someone to talk to, someone who wasn't as emotionally roiled up as he was. And right now, that someone, as strange as it seemed, was Billy Middleton. And Billy wasn't a kid. Not anymore. Not at his age. Not after what he had been through. Been through with Lincoln. Billy was alive because of Lincoln. Lincoln was Billy's friend. Friends helped each other.
Maybe he will hate you, but I doubt it, Billy said. I don't know the whole story, Link, but your son was kidnapped, right?
Lincoln nodded.
When that happened, how old was he? How long has he been there?
Lincoln's chin dropped to his chest. He rubbed at his nose.
Sam was, 7 when Teddy took him. He'll be 12 in 2 months.
5 years, or close to it. The kid had been gone for 5 years. Bad things had happened to kids in Billy's neighborhood. Sometimes word got out what those things were. Sometimes it didn't. Physical abuse, mental abuse. Sometimes sexual abuse. Collateral damage from drive-bys, from robberies. But a kid getting straight up abducted? That hadn't happened, as far as Billy knew. He thought of all the moms and dads he'd known in Tollingwood. How they would have been destroyed if their kid had just vanished.
He's only 11, Billy said. If he doesn't understand things now, maybe he will later on. I don't remember my mom and dad. They died when I was 6. Grandma, she became my whole world. Even then, I knew for real that she loved me, and without her, I would have been nothing. I would have been in some foster home somewhere. I knew that. But when I was 7, I'd wish that Grandma had stolen me away from my parents and they were still alive. I'd wish that someday my dad would come and get me. Because he loved me, you know? He loved me, and I was his son. So he would do anything to get me back.
It had been a long time since Billy had thought about those feelings. 13 years later, they came back as sharp as they'd been back then, as cutting as they'd been back then.
I was just a child, he said, all hurt and scared and confused. It took me a while to understand my parents didn't abandon me, didn't walk away from me because I wasn't worth loving. Even now, Link, even today, if my pops could somehow come back from the grave and I could see him, even for a minute, it would mean everything.
The hopelessness didn't fade completely from Lincoln's slate gray eyes, but it faded some. A small spark of that constant, angry ember that burned there rekindled.
You got to do it, Billy said. It's not even a question. Go see Sam. If he hates you, well, we'll figure it out. We'll figure out how to make it right.
Billy's own words echoed in his head. Had he really said those things? Not the stream of consciousness line of bullshit that perpetually flowed from his mouth, but something genuine. Something real.
We will figure it out, Lincoln said. You'd do that for me, Billy? You'd help me figure out how to make it right by Sam?
Billy felt a heavy wash of anxiety, of fear. He had said the words. Would he back them up? Yeah, he would. No matter what the cost. He would do it because Lincoln Franks was his friend.
Hell yeah, Billy said. I got you.
Lincoln stared. He sniffed. Slowly, he nodded.
Thank you,
he said. That means a lot.
Link was grateful for Billy's words, for his thoughts. For once, Billy wasn't just a burden on Link. He had actually helped the man. Ariella and Magda came back into the nave at the same time. Ariella with a roll of parchment and a pen, Magda holding a wooden box. Ariella sat on the couch. She set the troglodyte medallion on the table, then started writing quickly and efficiently. Magda handed Link in the box. He set it on the table and he opened it. Inside were folded pieces of paper, like sketchpad pages folded in half and in half again. Link had lifted the one on the top. He unfolded it, set it next to the box.
Will this do?
Ariella stopped writing. She looked at the paper, nodded slowly. That's perfect, Lincoln. She started writing again. Magda looked away, covered her mouth with her hand. She was trying to not cry. Billy leaned in and looked at the paper. A stick figure drawn in black crayon. It wasn't a Picasso or anything, but the crudely drawn armor and cape made it clear who the subject was. In green crayon next to it, the words, "I love you, Daddy." Goddamn, like this wasn't already heartbreaking enough.
Sam couldn't get the concept of double letters, Lincoln said. It was either one or three. It's the strangest thing.
Billy saw the Daddy was spelled with three D's. Ariella set the pen down.
Just sound this out, Lincoln, she said. Just like I have it written.
On the parchment were words. Syllables, really. Written mostly in lowercase, with a few in all caps.
Emphasis on the capitalized ones.
Ariella quickly scrawled some more letters. Lowercase A-I-R dash lowercase E-E dash uppercase E-L dash lowercase U-H.
That's how my name would be spelled phonetically. You get it?
Lincoln nodded.
And take your time, Billy said. Get those words right. We don't want some Klaatu Barada Nikto bullshit going down.
He cringed inside. What a horrible time to make a stupid joke. But Lincoln pursed his lips and nodded again.
No, we don't want that.
He picked up the medallion.
I hold this against the drawing?
That's right, Ariella said. Do that, then say the words I wrote down.
Lincoln held the medallion against the paper.
What exactly do these words say? What's a translation?
Ariella paused.
Honestly, Lincoln, I don't think you want to know.
Lincoln glanced at her, paused for a moment himself.
All right, he said. I trust you. Can I do it now?
Ariella gestured to the parchment.
All you have to do now is read.
Okay, he said. Here we go. Shaguin Nanim, Shanishi Asha, Uga Ralka Hul Nishasha, Sha'im Nana.
He slumped back against the couch, already unconscious, the medallion in his right hand still pressed to the paper in his left.
Well, damn, Billy said. Did it work?
Ariella touched one of the turquoise chunks on her necklace, held the hand over Lincoln's face.
I think so, she said. He's on his way, if he's not already there.
Magda picked up the parchment.
What's this phrase mean, anyway? And yeah, Ariella, I do want to know.
Ariella stood. She gave her skirt a tug, picked up her pen.
It means, sail me to the realm of nightmares. Let me speak with the damned.
Hey, Hey, this is Scott, the author of this story. This episode is sponsored by Regal Unlimited, which is all about movies. I love movies, and you can see that in my work, from the references to films to the movie quotes I embed in my dialogue and the summer blockbustery big action sequences that close out each novel. If you like going to the theater like I do, because that's where movies are meant to be enjoyed, Regal Unlimited makes perfect sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription that pays for itself in just two visits. See any standard 2D movie anytime with no blackout dates or restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in a premium format like 4DX, IMAX, RPX, or ScreenX, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And don't forget the snacks, man! With Regal Unlimited, you get 10% off all non-alcoholic concession items. So if you're planning to see two or more movies this month, you need to join. Remember, Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription that pays for itself in just two visits. Sign up now in the Regal app or at regmovies.com/unlimited. That's regmovies.com/unlimited. Use the code SIGLER024 and earn 10% off a 3-month subscription. That's SIGLER024 to earn 10% off a 3-month subscription.
In the climate-ravaged world of 2072, the city of Piura stands as a miraculous green haven. Piura is a geoengineered paradise that protects its fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. In a time when the world outside is unsafe, it's vital for Piura's existence that people rally behind the purpose of the city, and Demetria Lopez, head of the city's public relations, tirelessly promotes its idyllic image. But when she stumbles on a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Piura's existence, she must decide who and what she's willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Ray Seahorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Lincoln floated down. He knew the odors that filled his nose. In Rixitor training, he had learned to recognize them. Sulfur, burning pine sap, brimstone, scorched flesh. Those scents and more thickened the air around him, merged with a mist of gray that rose up from the thousands of flaming spots dotting the desolate landscape. Volcanoes soared high, their jagged chambers bubbling with magma that spilled through massive cracks and ran along deep channels. Shadowy creatures lurked in the dark clouds, some with shapes Lincoln recognized. Great birds, wyverns, dragons, void beetles, and some that he did not. Nebulous forms far too big to exist. Miles long legs with too many joints. Indiscernible curls and whirls and coils. The landscape wasn't all blackened and burning wasteland, though, just most of it. Many irregular areas of greenery. Forests, jungles, plains, and tree-speckled mountains. Towns and cities, some as ancient as the written word, some as modern as an oil baron's unimaginable excess, all shimmering with suffering, hazed with hate, billowing with blasphemy. Massive castles undoubtedly filled with hidden chambers that contained unspeakable evil. And not one, not two, but three amusement parks. Those smelled of cotton candy, of lies told to children, of inexpressible dread and inevitable agony, and of hopelessness, of loss. Was Sam in one of those? Was he in one of the castles or keeps? The lands grew more detailed the further Lincoln fell. He saw things moving now, in the wastelands, in the jungles and woods, in the mountains and the theme parks. Murky things, indistinguishable in the clinging gloom, things that stalked or lumbered, slithered or hopped, grabbed or gripped. Things that ate. He fell further, realized he was heading toward a small house, red with white trim, like a farmhouse out of some old TV show. A yard with green grass, a swing set and a trampoline, even a white picket fence. Just outside that fence, piles of cinder and smoldering ash, pits of boiling mud and bubbling tar, and corpses. Some half-rotted, some half-eaten, some crawling with carrion-munching, hook-skinned bugs the size of nightstands. Lincoln wasn't in control of his flight. He landed on the house's front steps, a rosebush budding with white on his left, a needs-to-be-trimmed-pretty-soon green hedge on his right. This was where they kept Sam. The door was white. Obviously painted over so many times, the paint itself might be as thick as the wood. A slightly rusted tin sign, blue with white letters, hung on the door. Welcome home. Lincoln sniffed. Aside from the sulfur and the brimstone, the cloying tar, the summery grass, and the new roses, Lincoln smelled two more things, smelled them strong. Darkest evil, and Samuel. Lincoln took two steps forward, raised an armored boot to push-kick the door. The door swung open for him, so fast and quiet that he stumbled forward into the house. He regained his balance, found himself looking into a folksy living room, brick fireplace and all. In front of that fireplace, sitting cross-legged on a braided rug, a pile of Legos scattered before him, was a gangly, black-haired little boy wearing blue jeans and a red Steven Universe shirt with a gold star on his chest. Samuel Jacoby Franks. He looked up at Lincoln, and his eyes went wide as saucers.
How did you get past the fence?
Lincoln blinked rapidly. That wasn't his son's voice. Sam's voice wasn't old, and Sam didn't hiss. Lincoln jumped back, shocked, his butt hitting the now closed door. Just outside the straight-line tunnel vision of Sam, a creature that was half cobra, half old woman, rose up from a couch, an embroidery hoop in her hand, indigo thread trailing from the hoop to a spindle resting on a wooden coffee table. She was 7 feet tall. No, 8. And he hadn't seen her. He'd only seen his son. The Naga, Sam's captor.
Daddy?
Legos fell from Sam's hands.
Daddy, is that you?
The snake hag tossed the hoop aside, the heavy gold bracelets on her wrists clinking like chimes. She stretched out her arms. Old skin sagged from them, baggy and loose from muscle lost to age. A blinding flash of vermilion blazed from her palms. When the glow blinked out, each hand held an Urval, 6 feet of age-darkened steel ending in a wicked, upward-pointed hook.
"Boy," she said, "cover your eyes."
Sam scrambled crawled to a small, white chair in the corner, kicking Legos aside in his wake. He sat, pulled his legs to his chest, wrapped his arms around them, and buried his face between his knees. He moaned in fear. This bitch terrified him. Had she hurt him? Had she beat him? Had she invaded his thoughts and tortured him with dreams of horror and destruction? Lincoln reached into his cloak. He drew his sword and his hatchet. He strode toward the snake hag. She slithered forward to meet him. They swung their weapons at the same time. His slice should have cleaved her snake head from her shoulders, but Tizona passed through the Naga as if she was a hologram. Her blade swished across his midsection, a strike meant to cleave him in two, but her sharp steel found neither cloak, nor armor, nor bone, nor flesh. Lincoln looked at her, at his sword, as she looked at him, at her Arvels. Astral projection. That's what Ariella had said. Lincoln's physical form wasn't really there. He was nothing but a specter.
"Please stop,"
Sam said, his face still hidden between his knees.
"Daddy, don't hurt Nanny."
He rocked back and forth, arms tight around his legs. Lincoln's rage died a quick death. In its place, a stunned nothing.
"It's all right, honey,"
the Naga said. Lincoln looked at her, at her scaly mouth, at her gleaming fangs. She forced a smile, her forked tongue flicking in and out.
"It's all right, Samuel," she said. "I didn't know he was her father."
Her snake eyes flicked toward Lincoln.
"And he didn't know who I was. Isn't that so, Daddy?"
None of this made sense. Samuel lifted his head just enough that one tear-glistening eye peeked out over his blue jeans.
"Is that right, Daddy?" Samuel asked. You didn't know who Nanny was?"
Lincoln glanced at the snake woman, caught her ever so slight nod. The beast was trying to calm Sam down. She was trying to comfort him.
What was happening?
Lincoln slid his weapons back into his cloak. He took a step toward his son and dropped to one knee. So beautiful. So perfect. His mother's nose. His father's slate gray eyes. Sam had grown. He was alive. And he looked to be unhurt.
"That's right, bud," Lincoln said, the last word strangled by his thickening throat. "I didn't know it was Nanny. It's okay. Don't cry. I'm here now, Sam. I'm here."
Sam lifted his head, put his feet on the carpet.
"Sometimes monsters try to get me," he said. "Nanny stops them. You fight monsters, Daddy. You would stop them if you were here. But you're not here."
Lincoln's breath left his body. He hung there, barely thinking, barely existing. Sam's words weren't an accusation, yet they gutted Lincoln. In his own way, Sam was trying to be supportive, and that made it all the worse.
"I'm trying to get you out of here," Lincoln said,
the words as hollow as his promises.
"I'm trying."
Sam didn't sob, yet tiny tears rolled from his big eyes down his cheeks.
I want to go home, Daddy, he said. I like it here, but I want to go home with you.
Lincoln reached out to wipe away his son's tears, but his fingers went right through Sam's face. He couldn't touch his son. Sam's eyes grew wider. He started to shake in fear. Fear of his father.
Daddy, are you a ghost? Are you a monster?
Lincoln's soul crumbled, split, and fell away.
Samuel, the Naga said, her voice lilting and syrupy,
the voice of molasses cookies warm from the oven.
You are a little tired. Take a quick nap.
Sam's eyes drooped instantly.
Okay, Nanny, he said.
He slid his butt sideways off the chair, curled up in a fetal position, and was instantly asleep.
He needs a moment, the snake woman said. When he sees things that are violent, he gets upset. A small sleep and he will be fine. How long can you stay?
Lincoln knelt next to his son. Why could he kneel on the carpet but not touch Sam?
I don't know, Lincoln said. Not long?
Had Ariella told him how long he could stay? If she had, he couldn't remember.
Then I will wake him soon, Nanny said. First, you and I must talk. I have not, will not hurt your child. He is nothing like his grandfather. Samuel is not a butcher.
Lincoln didn't look away from Sam, but he did turn an ear toward the Naga.
Butcher?
The old snake woman hissed.
You dare to make that word a question when your father is Jacoby Franks?
Jacoby was a butcher? Yes. So was Lincoln. Depending on one's perspective, all Rixitors could be considered butchers. Lincoln finally tore his gaze away from his son. He looked at the monster. Monster? Really? That, too, depended on one's perspective.
Violent things, Lincoln said. Sam gets upset when he sees violent things. What kind of things?
The Naga extended her right arm, showing the horrible scars there. Scars old enough to match the color of her skin, new enough that they had yet to crinkle and crease.
Mistress Callista commands I defend this child, she said, with my life, if need be. I have killed many who came to make Samuel their prey.
Lincoln sniffed deeply. He smelled no lie. The Naga told the truth. If it was artifice, it was artifice of a caliber beyond his capacity to comprehend. When Callista had allowed Lincoln to watch Sam, the Naga had always been there. Lincoln had thought the creature was pretending to care for Sam in order to keep the boy placid, keep him docile. But there was obviously more to it than that. Nanny Naga wasn't just Sam's captor. She was his defender.
I don't understand, Lincoln said. You're protecting him? I mean, I believe that you are. That's part of whatever deal you have with Callista, but you genuinely care about my son. I can see it. He can see it.
Nanny let out a lung-rattling sigh. It seemed to deflate her. Her rigid, ready-to-strike body sagged. Muscled, scaled coils slithered, adjusted, and she sat back on a couch that creaked beneath her weight.
Your son is a good boy, she said. I hated him at first. These are my golden years. I should be baking on the sands of a great desert somewhere, absorbing endless sunlight and the devotion of those who worship me. Instead, I had to be here.
She gestured to the house around them.
In this
ridiculous replica of a human hovel, watching over the spawn of one whose kind has killed more of my kind than I will ever know.
Rixitors, Adjurators, and monks often battled Nagas. Lincoln had killed two of them himself.
But after a while,
the Naga looked to the sleeping boy.
I realized that this child is not responsible for the sins of his parents, his grandparents, or his ancestors. He is as ugly as the rest of you stiff-limbed, naked monkeys, but in his heart, he's good. He obeys. He is kind to me.
She reached to a small end table at the couch's side, lifted the lid of a porcelain keepsake box, and set it down. She pulled out a folded piece of paper. Folded. In half. Then in half. Again. She unfolded it. Held it toward Lincoln. A drawing done in crayon. The art was far better than the one Lincoln had used to get here, but it was still the art of a child, full of thick lines and heavy strokes. It was a Naga. Snake body done in dark brown and yellowish white, bracelets done in goldenrod. And holding her hand, a boy wearing blue jeans and a red shirt with a gold star on the chest. Below the nanny and the boy, drawn in orange letters, the words, "I love you, Nanny," with three N's. Emotions Lincoln had never known exploded within him. Overwhelming, overpowering. Guilt and shame, but also relief. A great burden lifting up, if only a little. Sam was trapped on the shelf, but he was safe. He had a protector. Lincoln sat on the couch next to Nanny Naga. Then Lincoln Franks, bounty hunter, monster slayer, and ex-Rixitor, began to cry. You have been listening to Slay, created by Scott Sigler and Rob Otto. Performed by Scott Sigler. Copyright 2024, Empty Set Entertainment. For more info on Scott Sigler, his novels, short stories, and podcasts, visit scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song They're Watching Me by the band Superweapon.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.